The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
We are once again blessed with live music for our prelude and postlude. We'll be blessed again with live music for our postlude. It was absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much. That's Emily and Sophie Tran. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. We are here today because of hope. Our presence together speaks to our hope that what we do matters in the world, a hope in the possibility of a better world. I'm Reverend Andrew Weber, and it is at times like this when I am filled with hope. Even when I read news about growing hatred, violence, even when I notice injustices in the world. When I come together in community, I feel that tune being sung without words, which never stops at all. Hope is that thing with feathers which perches in our soul. And it is here, together, with each other, that we nourish and sustain that hope that we have for ourselves, that hope that we have for the world. Your presence here gives me hope. So come. Let us worship together. Let us give each other hope together. We join with Unitarian Universalists across the country and around the globe this morning in lighting our chalice, the symbol of our free faith and a symbol of hope for all of humankind. I have each Sunday asked a different committee or different group within the congregation to come up and light the chalice, and this Sunday I've asked the nominating committee to come up. So if you are a member of the nominating committee, please come forward. And if you're like, what? I don't know if I... If you don't know, you're not a member. And if you didn't know that this was happening and you're a member, come on forward. It's okay. The nominating committee is tasked with leadership development. That is, connecting members of our community with places that they can serve. So if you are ever interested in leadership at Thomas Paine, speak to these people. So let us light the chalice with these words. We gather. We bring our sorrows, our disappointments, our failures. We gather for healing, for laughter, and to rejoice. We gather to find new ways of loving, new ways of thinking, new ways of being. We gather. Yes, always we gather, for it is in the gathering that we find our hope. Each Sunday, we light a second beacon of hope, a second challenge of action, acknowledging that what we want in the world must start in our hearts. Please respond with the text on the screen. May peace be with us and all the people of the world. Thank you, nominating committee. In this season of darkness, we are lighting many flames, each with their own meaning, each with their own purpose. And to celebrate and acknowledge the Christian season of Advent, Phil Manos will come forward to help lighting our Advent wreath.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We always just light this thing every year. And this year it was really funny that the wreath disappeared. We got the wrong candles lit the second week. Last week, the pink joy candle got preempted. And here we are. Hopefully everything's in the right order and we're going to do it again. All right, this morning, a little from the Gospel of Phil Manis. I haven't written my book yet, but here are a few of my thoughts on the Advent wreath. Unitarian Universalism is a faith that draws on the teachings of many great teachers. Religions and traditions, our symbols and rituals are often aspects and adoptions. The idea of the Advent wreath has been adapted through the ages from pagans to the concept of the wreath originated among German Lutherans in the 16th century. However, it was not until three centuries later that the modern Advent wreath took shape and was incorporated in Western religion. A lot of what we think of as modern day symbolism of these four candles and their color has to do with Christianity and the coming of Christ. I think the meaning of this season and the significance of each candle represents a broader construct for Unitarian Universalism. Here goes my voice again. The wreaths themselves are circular, and they are usually made of evergreens. This signifies hope. The circle is infinite love. The first purple candle lit on the fourth Sunday before Christmas stands for hope and is the tone of the season. The second purple candle lit on the third Sunday before Christmas stands for peace and the hoped for outcome of the season. The third candle is lit on the second Sunday before Christmas and signifies joy, and pink is a joyful color. The last purple candle lit on the Sunday before Christmas represents love. Each time we light the Advent candles during the holiday season, may we be reminded of our call to hope in times of darkness, seek peace amidst turmoil, embrace joy in difficult circumstances, and extend love towards all.
Thank you, Phil. Today also marks the end of Hanukkah. And it is always important to show our love, to show our support for those who are increasingly the victims of hatred and violence. As Preston and Rick light the lights of the menorah, let us remember those lives lost in Australia, the growing anti-Semitism in our own country, and what we can do to promote love.
This description was written by Joanne Walker. Hanukkah is an 8-day Jewish holiday that centers on light, resilience, and hope. It is Judaism's festival of light, which commemorates events from more than 2,000 years ago, when the Jewish people reclaimed their sacred space in Jerusalem after a period of oppression. According to tradition, when they rededicated the temple, there was only enough purified oil, and it had to be purified oil, to light the menorah for one day. Miraculously, that small amount of oil lasted 8 days, long enough for new oil to be prepared. At its heart, Hanukkah is a story about hope in moments of uncertainty. The miracle did not begin with abundance, it began with scarcity. Faced with darkness, the people chose to light the menorah anyway, trusting that even a small act could make a difference. That decision itself was an act of hope. Each night of Hanukkah, an additional candle is lit. This is the eighth night, so we're going to light them all, gradually increasing the light rather than diminishing it. This practice reflects the belief that hope grows when it is shared. One candle can ignite another without losing its own flame, reminding us that even in difficult times, light has the power to multiply. Today, Hanukkah is celebrated with candle lighting, traditional foods, songs, and gatherings with family and friends. This year, Hanukkah has been tarnished by the attack on the Bondi Beach in Australia on the first day. The world always seems to act stunned when these events occur, but it has been going on for thousands of years. Yet the Jewish people persist, they continue. Beyond the customs, the holiday offers a timeless message that perseverance matters, that faith in the future can sustain us, and that hope, like a small flame, can endure and illuminate even the darkest moments. Now, as I read the Hebrew prayer for the lighting of the candles, Rick Cole is going to... Can you do that? Does that work? Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam asher kidshanu b'mitzvotov v'tzivanu lahadlik ner shel Hanukkah. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam she'asa nisam lavoteinu b'yamim ha'hem uvaman hazeh.
With these flames now kindled, we begin, we continue our service. If you would please rise in body or in spirit to sing 225 in the gray hymnal. If you want a hymnal there in the back, the lyrics will also be on the screen. O come, Emmanuel, which is an Advent hymn. It speaks to the season. Soul of Israel. Thank you so much. I'd like to keep you on your toes, so when you get a hymnal, you're never sure if it's going to match what we're singing. Now I have Linda Weaver coming forward to read a story for us, and if you want to read along, do you need a copy of the book?
I do have the book over here. I saw someone trying to get in the back door, so that's why
I
zoomed around.
Wonderful. You may come forward.
Oh? Logan Lucas? No, it's all good. Okay. I think I'm on my own here. Yay, Brian.
Before I do, I want to say that I ordered this book on Amazon because I like to make the slides ahead of time. And when I opened it up, trash fell out. And I thought, I'm paying good money for this, you know, trash inside the book. Then I read the book. It's written by Amanda Gorman, and as you may remember, she was the presidential inaugural laureate and is one of the youngest poet laureates ever. So I'm going to read it, and Ryan's going to, if you want to go out and, you know, near the back where people can see, they may not be able to see the screen, or you decide. It's called Something Someday. I do want to read one thing here. In fact, Ryan, if you want to read this part, you can. Sometimes the world feels broken. You want to go to that one? Just read that one paragraph.
Sometimes the world feels broken, and problems seem too big to fix. But somehow we all have the power to make a difference. With a little faith and maybe the help of a friend, together we can find beauty and create change.
Okay. And with that, we'll go on with the story. You are told that this is not a problem, but you're sure there's something wrong. You are told that this cannot be fixed, but you know that you can help. You are told that this is too big for you, but you've seen the tiniest things make a difference. You're told that this won't work, but how will you know if you don't try? You're told to sit and wait, but you know people have already waited too long. You're told what's going on. That's what's going on. It was very sad. But you're not just sad. You're scared and confused. You're angry. And maybe, just maybe, a little hopeful. You're told not to hope, but you keep hoping anyway. Sometimes you feel like you're all alone, but someday, somewhere, you find a friend. Someone who will hope with you, who believes in your dream, someone who will fight with you. You make a promise to each other. You say, there is a problem, but it's our problem together, so we can fix it together. This problem is big, but together we are bigger. You make another friend and tell them, it's okay to be sad. And they tell you, sometimes we'll lose, but that's all right. We'll try again. And so you do. Together working, together beginning, over and over and over. Until you're no longer beginning, you're winning. Suddenly, there's something you're sure is right, something you know you helped fix. Something small that changed something big. Something that worked. Something that makes you feel hopeful, happy, and loved. Something that is not a dream, but the day you live in. Something that makes you smile as you tell someone else. And that is it. And before I go any further, yeah, that's a good story. I do want to say, if you look around, I would be remiss if I left this podium without thanking Phil and the help people that helped him make this sanctuary so beautiful. I walked in the other day and like, I know it's a lot of work because I saw all those boxes out there. So thank you for all that, Phil.
It's that time of year, right? Amanda Gorman, the author here, the poet laureate, and there's a copy in the back too. So if you want to like flip through and read the book now or during the potluck, you may. One there, one here. She speaks to the sort of routine frustration of an everyday concern. There's trash on the sidewalk. The neighborhood is filthy. People litter, right? And she starts the book in a sense of despair and hopelessness. And it's a feeling I can relate to, right? I can relate to that. And maybe you can too, because on the way here, driving here, I don't think anyone walked here, but as you're walking around town, driving around town, you see litter on the side of the road. I mean, I was even, of course, because I was thinking about this on the way up, and I was like, well, the Blue Route, and I was like, there's a lot of trash on the side of the Blue Route. And it's so commonplace that we see it all the time. And this ability to ignore it, to forget about it, is why I call that feeling despair. Because what's the point of me picking up that one piece of litter? How can I possibly make a difference when there's so much trash and someone else is just going to throw something else, right? Or maybe I don't have the time to pick up all the trash. I don't have my garbage bag or gloves when I go out for a walk. Or driving here, what am I going to fill my car with trash? This is the self-talk that goes on in my head, and my actions, along with my inner talk, show me that I have despair, right? My mindset is that there is no hope. There's no hope. What I do doesn't matter. There's no way that this problem, this smallish problem of trash, will ever be solved. It's not just trash, though, is it? Like, where in your local communities have you seen a problem? Have you noticed a concern? Not just littering. Maybe you see unsafe driving or drug use or abuse, lack of public restrooms, homelessness, not much affordable housing, lack of access to food, stray animals, limited walkability, public transportation not being, right? Few parks. Some of these issues we may say, oh yeah, I know what he's talking about. And others might not be in our neighborhood. But we could go on and on about our own concerns, what we don't think is going well, right? And for some of these, we take action. We go out there, we pick up the trash. We're going to go on a neighborhood pickup. We volunteer at a food pantry. We donate to park services. But for others, there doesn't seem to be time or energy enough, right? And it seems like we're wasting our time, money, energy. And I get in that space. I can feel overwhelmed by the needs of my local community and fall into that rut of inaction and hopelessness. So what do I do? Well, this is where I come to my faith, my Unitarian Universalist faith. And it helps me because at these points of hopelessness, I'm reminded that a better world is possible. I'm reminded that people have been striving for community improvement for decades. Well, I mean, more than decades, for centuries. Right? I'm comforted by the community we share, knowing that I am not alone. I'm comforted by the rituals we take part in, knowing that this chalice is a beacon of hope for all of humanity. I'm comforted by the hymns we sing, with the words both inspiring and challenging. And sometimes when I feel hopeless, I actually, for social action, I sometimes actually sing in my mind, soon the day will arrive when we will be together and no longer. Do any of you know this song? Well, we're singing it next, so you might know it that when we do it. All right. And you might know the wait and see what a world there can be if we care, if we share, you and me. Right? And right, hold on. There's no need to get overwhelmed. There's no need to, bless you, there's no need to get overwhelmed. The better world will come if we just wait and care and wait and see. Oh, but therein lies my comfort and my challenge, because there's so much more to do than just wait and see. If I just sat down like, I'm just going to wait and see, right? The hymn says wait and see. Where's the better world? It's not here yet. We need to do what Amanda Gorman was saying. We need to find other people and start working together. And it sounds like the often spoken words of support, sometimes this wait and see of saying, my thoughts and prayers are with you. Oh, who's heard? Yeah. Has anyone heard that? Oh, and have you heard the pushback against that? It's like, our thoughts and prayers, you know, thanks a lot. It's like, well, thoughts and prayers are all there. That's nice and good. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just when we stop there, when we're like, well, my thoughts and prayers. It's like, no, thoughts and prayers and then something and then action. And then putting those thoughts and prayers into action. Does anyone know Ken Follett? He's a great historical fiction writer. I really enjoy him. I've been sharing his books too, you know. Yeah. Well, he has this one character and called Father Peter, and this was in The Pillars of the Earth. And this character, even though he's not real, he has some great sayings. And he says to his abbot, he says, Father Peter, the abbot of his first monastery, used to say, pray for miracles, but plant cabbages. Right? I mean, I can get behind that theology. Pray for miracles, but plant cabbages. Like, don't just send your thoughts and prayers. Don't stop when you're thinking and you're talking about the concern. Go out and make the world a better place. Get a group of people and pick up the garbage. Create a community garden, right? That's what she's talking about. Join forces with your friends. Support or create an organization to help with park upkeep. Donate clothing or money to your church, which is supporting the food pantry, just as an example. That's what we're doing, okay, right? I mean, the list of hands-on things we could do, the list of active responses is just as numerous as the list of concerns and problems we see. There is a tangible way to work toward fixing the world. So let's not just wait for the day to arrive, but let's also help make that day arrive. And as we think about that, please join with me, rise in body or in spirit, and join with me, 146, soon the day will arrive.
Yesach hakutov yaset ben habayit leben hasadot. O tire kama tov yie bashana habaa. O tire kama tov yie bashana habaa. The day will arrive when we will be together, and no longer will we live in fear. And the children will smile without wondering whether on that day thunderclouds will appear. Wait and see what a world there can be if we share, if we care, you and me. Wait and see what a world there can be if we share, if we care, you and me. Some have dreamed, some have died to make a bright tomorrow. Share if we care, you and me.
So whenever people come in and there's their tables, you generally can know, like, okay, Andrew's gonna do something a little bit different than just talking. This is that time. I'm so excited. Here's the thing that hope, just like peace. When we light the peace lamp, we say, I want peace in the world, but I have to start with it in my heart. If we want hope in the world, we have to start with it here for it to spread, for it to grow. And so what I've done is I've written a whole bunch of little affirmations on pieces of paper on the tables. Don't get them just yet, just in a moment. Because one of the first steps to increasing hope is increasing our self-worth, helping with self-affirmations. And so what I've done is helped us embody the spiritual practice this month by giving ourselves, by giving others positive affirmations. So what I'm going to ask you to do is we're going to take some time, and it's going to be a little chaotic. Grab one or a couple of the pieces of paper and read it to someone else. Or if you pick one and you're like, I need to hear this, just put it in your pocket and get another one. That's okay. There are a bunch. If you don't see any in front of you, turn around, walk around. There are pieces of paper everywhere, and I will cut you off before you're ready for it. Go. I told you I would cut you off before you're ready. That moment is now. You are all worthy of love. Good. Keep these. Keep them on. Keep passing them on. Keep telling them to people. Come to the potluck and share them later in the day, in the week. Yes, and if you want, I can send you all of them. But for now, let us continue on with a reading shared by Preston.
This is a reading from The Diary of a Young Girl by Anne Frank. The reading today is short in length, but deep in content. It comes from The Diary of a Young Girl by Anne Frank. Anne was a teenager living in the Netherlands who wrote a diary while she and her family were in hiding from the Nazi occupation. She was killed in a concentration camp. Anne did not survive the Nazis, but her words live on. In her words, "It's difficult in times like these. Ideals, dreams, and cherished hopes rise within us, only to be crushed by grim reality. It's a wonder I haven't abandoned all my ideals. They seem so absurd and impractical. Yet I cling to them because I still believe, in spite of everything, that people are truly good at heart. It's utterly impossible for me to build my life on a foundation of chaos, suffering, and death. I see the world being slowly transformed into a wilderness. I hear the approaching thunder that one day will destroy us too. I feel the suffering of millions. And yet, when I look up at the sky, I somehow feel that everything will change for the better, that this cruelty too will end, that peace and tranquility will return once more. In the meantime, I must hold on to my ideals. Perhaps the day will come when I'll be able to realize them."
Okay, we started with litter, right? We started with litter on the street, and now we're recalling Nazi Germany. So, right, there's so much more. Oh my gosh. Right, community difficulties are only the beginning. Right, what about the challenge to democracy, rising xenophobia, ever-present fascism, hatred, oppression? Okay, no, stop. This is too much. This is too much. I mean, I was okay picking up trash and creating a community garden. I can do that. But what? I can even understand maybe running for political office and trying to change my community. But this is too much. What can I possibly do to help my government shift away from, help my government in its shift away from accountability and its shift toward hatred? Well, that's a good question. And this is why I look to Anne Frank. She's living in hiding, maybe not knowing exactly what is happening, what is going on at that time, but she's living in hiding and has the reality of people being rounded up and disappearing off the streets, out of their homes. Anne Frank speaks at a time of consuming defeat in the face of an overwhelming problem. Hatred is rife. People are disappearing. Death is anticipated. And we are not living in Nazi Germany. We cannot know what Anne and her family were experiencing except through stories from those who were there. But we are living in times of fear and hatred. We are living in times when masked and unidentified thugs can take people off the street and detain or deport them. Right? This is our reality, where truth is changed to bolster personal narratives and science is altered depending on emotions. So what do we do in the midst of hopelessness so overwhelming that a community volunteer day is like, it's a laughable response. Hey, you want to go volunteer with me? It's like, why? What would that do? Where is our hope? Our hope lies in the fact that not everyone is against us. Our hope lies in the fact that we can still look to others. We can still strive for the impossible, to reach for the stars, to push towards social justice, and that small steps are always possible. I visited my sister in Washington, D.C. recently, and we were up in the morning. She said, "Oh, I need to go do something." I was like, "What are you doing?" "I'm walking some kids to school." And I was like, "Well, your daughter's off school." She and other volunteers in the area They walk like 40 to 50 kids to school whose parents are too scared to leave their homes because they might get deported. I have a high school friend who's Stephanie Vincent, whom some of us know with our interactions with her, who drives the streets of Norristown, PA, with an organization she created to provide warnings when ICE is active in the area. That's right here. Now, my sister and my friend are no different from you and me. They have found a way to push back. They have found a way to be in community and promote love. Oh my gosh, but Andrew, that's not enough. Walking children to school, reporting on ICE, like, isn't going to change our government. It isn't going to change our culture. It isn't going to promote love. You're correct. You're absolutely correct if that's what you're thinking. But we have to start somewhere. And frankly, we don't know the impact of our actions. We don't know the full impact of what we do or say. We don't know how much it's going to go on. Now, this may seem like a little bit of a topic shift, but it's on point. Stick with me here. Who knows the 2016 Star Wars movie Rogue One? Yeah, I knew I'd have some hands shoot up there. Yeah, right? And don't worry, there are no spoilers. So if you want to see this movie later or if what I'm saying intrigues you, I won't spoil anything. Rogue One tells the story that happened directly before the original 1977 film, right? So 1977 was the first Star Wars. This one is 2016. Now, I'm no scriptwriter, but I see a difficulty in making a sequel, a prequel, right? You're writing a prequel 40 years after the original. Okay, there's some problems here, because first is the large possibility that the story we experience in the prequel was not written, was not imagined, was not in existence at the time of the original. So there could be a continuity issue of like, well, I've got this great story, but it doesn't fit with what's already there. Or, right, the reality that all the actors, the actresses are 40 years older or deceased, right? I mean, that's 40 years is a long time. So how do you create a storyline which connects to the one which already exists? Because we already know, right, I mean, this is not a spoiler. We already know that any new characters introduced in Rogue One don't have a future in the original film. Like that's a given based on how when they were made. And so the easiest way for Rogue One to not conflict with the earlier movies is to do what time already does for us in real life. How are there no conflicts? Well, all the characters, all the people, all the prophets, and all the inspirations become nameless and forgotten. Time keeps on going, and with every Luke Skywalker, there are 100,000 nameless heroes and heroines who work to overthrow the Empire, whose names are gone forever. The Rogue One characters don't make it. With every Martin Luther King Jr., there are 100,000 people who worked for race equality whose names are forgotten forever. Oh. Right? Never go see a movie with a minister. I mean, this is like, I get really deep. And it's so sad. And it's so hopeful. Because even in the midst of despair, there is hope, right? The despair that these people, we know they're not going to make it just because of the way the movie's made. But the hope that what they do matters. Oh my gosh, the hope that you don't have to be that one voice. You don't have to be Martin Luther King Jr. You don't have to be Luke Skywalker. What they did mattered. It went on after their deaths, after their lives, right? The hope that what you do makes a difference here and now, and the hope that your actions continue and have a lasting impact after you're gone. Yeah, I mean, that, wow. Yeah, that's why I love Rogue One. I mean, Rogue One, it's like, it's amazing. Hope comes from that, the faith that we are not alone, the faith that our actions have an impact, and that sometimes that goal lies beyond what we can even imagine or see, beyond our lives. Listen again to Anne Frank, whose hope lives on, even though she was a victim of hatred and violence. It's difficult in times like these. Ideals, dreams, and cherished hopes rise within us only to be crushed by grim reality. It's a wonder I haven't abandoned all my ideals. They seem so absurd and impractical. Yet I cling to them because I still believe, in spite of everything, that people are still good at heart. It's utterly impossible for me to build my life on a foundation of chaos, suffering, and death. I see the world being slowly transformed into a wilderness. I hear the approaching thunder that one day will destroy us too. I feel the sufferings of millions. And yet when I look up at the sky, I sometimes feel that everything will change for the better, that this cruelty too will end, that peace and tranquility will return once more. In the meantime, I must hold on to my ideals. Perhaps the day will come when I will be able to realize them. Now, that day never came for Anne Frank, the day when she was able to realize her ideals. But her hope lives on inside us. Right? I mean, that's the comfort and that's the challenge, that your hope is what you do. Everything you do makes a difference. Your impact extends beyond your life into the unknown future. Right? Wherein lies that challenge, that others' hopes are alive in us. We are the hope made manifest from countless individuals, from countless generations who have gone before. I end with a quote from Amanda Gorman, from that book, "The problem is big, but together we are bigger." Amen and amen. And now let us sing. As I often do after a deep message, I just need to sing so you can rise in body and spirit for number 95, "There Is More Love Somewhere."
Now is a special time in our service when we share the love, the hope, the joy, and some of the sorrow too in our personal lives, to make our own experience part of the experience of this whole community. If you have something important to you that you want to give also to the care of this community, please come up, if you're here physically, and use this microphone. Remind us who you are and tell us your story, your personal care, concern, joy. If you're online, you also have an opportunity to raise your hand, actual or virtual, and share with us as we go on. Someone, come please, tell us about the important things in your life. We'll bring this time of sharing to a close with this time a different hymn, Come Sing a Song with Me, and I'll bring you hope when hope is hard to find. Read together, we will read responsively. Today is, among other things, the solstice. Some call it the beginning of winter, but it's when, in winter, we begin to look forward with hope to growing light. And here we go. The days of the year have stiffened in ice, and darkness has grown upon the land.
The season of cold and early dusk is upon us.
The sun has retreated down in the sky.
The
The living green has forsaken the earth, and the leaves have fallen. But we approach the shortened days with gladness, and the ancient fear no longer on our faces. The frozen soil is no enduring danger, and the heavy death upon the earth is no lasting peril. We hold the turning of the year as a promise, and the renewing of life is our solid hope. Now the sun will again climb the heavens, and henceforth the darkness will be pushed back each day. The young will be brought forth from the womb, and the shoot will burst from the seed. In the midst of winter, the promise is given of the summer season. And in the midst of the darkness, there comes the assurance of the light. The good news of life. Blessed be.
Thank you, Demi. So, in composing and picking the different pieces, I really wanted to have us do an activity at this point, but I hear and smell the potluck. And so here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna charge each of you. Take a moment. If it helps to close your eyes. Take a moment and think about when you are in despair. And it can be the everyday despair of the litter on the street. It can be the overwhelming, against all odds, despair of promoting love in the world. Think about when you're in despair, how do you find hope? How do you go on? Hold on to that which helps you find hope in times of despair. And at the potluck, or later when you're interacting with people, share that. And if you don't have something, ask. Ask someone else. It's like, oh, can I sit here for the potluck? Yeah, great. Okay, what brings you hope in despair? That's my charge for our potluck. So now as we part, we impart with our final closing hymn. It's 354. We laugh, we cry, as many of us have done today. 354. Please rise in body or in spirit.
We
even when it trembles. May it be the kind of hope that plants seeds, waits in the dark, and trusts the stirring. Hope that doesn't deny despair, but dares to outlast it. Amen, and blessed be.